Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. For his last meal, John Wayne Gacy requested 12 fried shrimp, a bucket of original recipe KFC, French fries, and a pound of strawberries. Gary Gilmore was served steak, potatoes, milk, and coffee. He drank only the milk and coffee. Timothy McVeigh asked for 2 pints of mint chocolate chip ice cream. Victor Figuer asked only for a single pitted olive. Ethel and Julius Rosenberg were not given a choice. There is something strangely intriguing about what death row inmates request before execution. Dead man eating, famous last meals, the Last Meals Project are among the blogs and Facebook groups and art projects and dinner party games providing a voyeuristic glimpse at the final decision a condemned person makes. Requests run the gamut from lobster and steak dinners to pecan pie and cherry Kool-Aid to the symbolic pairing of bread and water. Brent Cunningham is deputy editor of the Columbia Journalism Review. He wrote about the history and meaning of the last meal for Lapham's Quarterly. And Brent, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
What do we know of the origins of the last meal ritual?
Well, it's not entirely clear. That was one of the kind of frustrating aspects of my research on this. You'll see references in scholarly works to ancient Greece, but nothing very specific. But I think that, you know, it's not surprising that you find this pretty much everywhere there is some kind of capital punishment. Whether your interest is in Christianity and sort of the Last Supper, which I think comes to a lot of people's minds, or if it's just a question of a final comfort before you die, I think food and death have been sort of intertwined in interesting ways really as far back as we can go.
Well, it's certainly something that has captured public attention. And as you say, there's something a little eerie about it because it's like you're spying in on a very private choice of somebody whose life and death suddenly becomes public. What do you think the fascination is for us?
Well, I think it's you can't separate it from our fascination with death. And here we have people who are facing it, and they're asked to kind of choose the last thing that they eat. And I think that, you know, that can certainly lend itself to sort of a morbid and voyeuristic parlor game. But I also think there's a legitimate interest in what somebody who's facing what we will all face at some point chooses to eat as their last meal on Earth. And, you know, to me, the fascination is sort of inherent.
It's interesting that this ritual has continued even as executions are becoming increasingly less common, even as the death penalty itself becomes increasingly more fraught. I mean, death penalty convictions in most states have to be fought on appeal. These are long, drawn-out cases, yet we've held on to this ritual of the last meal. What do you think that's saying about our society and how it views prisoners?
You get to the point where society needs to feel like it is getting retribution when we carry out an execution in its name. And the execution process had become so dehumanized and so sterile and so stripped of all emotional content that that retributive quality was sort of lost. I mean, it was though we were killing some abstract disease rather than an actual human who chose to do things freely and was not sort of this aberrant creature. And so by giving them this choice or this illusion of choice at the very end, the thinking is that it restores a certain amount of humanity and kind of helps fulfill this retributive need that society has. I thought that was really fascinating, and that's not my idea. These guys, these scholars who've worked on this for years, and it rang wholly true to me after doing all this research, though.
So what is it that these choices actually tell us about the prisoners, or do they illuminate anything?
Well, I think they do. I mean, I think there are a preponderance of what social scientists call status foods in most of these requests. And it says something about the socioeconomics of who we're executing. Again, it's not a it's not breaking news that most of the people executed in this country and probably most countries these days are poor people. But you see a certain reflection of that in the food, the kind of mass market comfort foods and the things that are kind of identified, again, in a mass market with fine dining. So steak and shrimp and lobster make an appearance every now and then. Mm-hmm. I think what somebody chooses as his or her last meal does say a lot about who they are, where they're from, what their history is, you know, how they're feeling at that moment. But the downside of that is that you find out toward the end of the piece that most times they don't even get what they request. And that's where I find it's sort of disgusting.
What do you mean they don't get what they request?
Well, there are, in most states, there are limits, monetary and availability limits on what you can actually get. I mean, you can ask for whatever you want. Nobody is allowed to have cigarettes or alcohol. And, you know, there are some states that have like a $20 limit. There are some states that have, you know, a $40 limit. And then beyond that, some states just limit it to whatever's available in the prison pantry that day. And it's unlikely they're going to have a filet mignon. So you end up, you order steak, you often end up getting chopped meat. You order...
Lobster tail,
you get fish sticks. Now, you know, I'm sure there have been exceptions to this, but see, this never gets reported. I mean, the kind of the voyeuristic parlor game that we're all so fascinated with, and I understand that, just deals with these requests, and it's so removed from the reality of what the last meal is and what it actually represents in our society. It's, you know, it's state-sanctioned killing. The reality of it is a lot uglier and less fun to you know, think about and say, you know, what books would you take to a desert island sort of thing.
Right.
And the other thing, too, is that a lot of this stuff, even what they do get, they often don't eat very much. Mm. I mean, think about it. I mean, would you really be able to eat much if you were about to be executed?
Well, then it is especially macabre of me to ask you if you've considered what your last meal would be.
Of course. I mean, look, I can be kind of disgusted by the phenomenon and still recognize the appeal and the attraction of it. And I think that's the entry point that's most accessible to people. What would I have? I would definitely have some oysters. I would definitely have a piece of strawberry rhubarb pie. And I would probably have some strong black coffee. And I don't know, maybe a few other things, some fruit. It wouldn't be too elaborate, but you know, I like to eat, and it is fun to think about that. What would you have?
Well, I was just thinking strawberry rhubarb pie is one of my favorites. I really do love sweets, and since, you know, there's no real price that one is going to pay for eating too many sweets, I think I'd have a lot of cupcakes. And I like a milkshake. But you've made me think about, like, even if it is theater, this person is going to be put to death. We can offer them some little wish. And it almost seems like a cruel thing to dangle now, you know, whereas I thought that there was a certain charitable nature to it.
Well, look, I think that there probably are inmates who do get some comfort from this. And I think that there are probably well-meaning prison administrators who would defend it on those grounds. And who am I to say that they're wrong? I mean, I don't deal with this every day, thank God. And, you know, I do know that when the end comes for some of these people, you know, it's not always easy for the guards, for the administrators who may have grown close to some of these inmates and actually, you know, come to see them as something more than just a killer or a rapist or whatever it is that they're being executed for. So I'm not suggesting that this is entirely done without compassion. I think there is an element of compassion in the last meal. And I think it probably does bring a bit of comfort, even just the choice, being given the choice, completely apart from the execution process. Just our modern prison culture is, again, so the inmates are so stripped of all choice. So there's, even if they end up eating nothing because they're terrified, they might get some pleasure, moment of pleasure, in actually contemplating what they'd like to have.
Brent Cunningham, deputy editor of the Columbia Journalism Review. Thank you for your time with us today.
Oh, well, it was my pleasure. I'm happy to have a chance to come on and talk about it.
You'll find a link to his article, which was in Lapham's Quarterly, called Last Meals, at wordofmouthradio.org. Stay with us for a man the New Yorker calls a born raconteur with a soldier's can-do spirit and a poet's mercurial soul. The Washington Post just says he's killingly funny. A conversation with Found Magazine founder Davey Rothbart, author of My Heart is an Idiot, when word of mouth continues.